Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and this is the Player Rating Show. Joining me today is Max Cohen from the Boot Room. This episode will be discussing the performances of the Fulham players against Watford. We have much to discuss in this episode, but before we do anything else, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. I've now talked to Max a great deal, but I enjoy talking to Max. Max, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Russ. Yeah, it's second straight week. We got three episodes, and you know, this one's much more agreeable to talk about than the Manchester City loss. So I'll take this over that any day of the week.
Totally agree with you, my friend. And what's great about this, and I keep saying this, and I've actually been tweeted about this, I'm enjoying doing these three, I guess you could say, versions of a post-match show each match. It's fun because we really dive into exactly what happened in different ways. One is just looking at it right after the match. We're just giving our reaction. The second one is our full post-match show, which is great because we can really analyze everything that happened during the match. And the third is more about the focus on the players. So we really get to look at their performances in more detail, and that's what we're going to do here. We are going to use the ratings from Ryan O'Donovan from football.london to go through it and see if they match up, Max, with what you would rate them. We'll do that. We also have an interesting article from Ryan that we're going to talk about as well, and that's how we're going to start, Max. Ryan wrote this. It's entitled, Defensive Issues Need Sorting and Mitrovic's Importance, 5 Key Points from Fulham Draw. So I'm going to go through all of his 5 key points, and we're going to talk about it. I think it's a great way to discuss also what happened on Saturday, and then after that, we will go through his player ratings and get yours as well. So let's start from the beginning. Here is what Ryan O'Donovan of football.london said. This is his first key point. Ryan Sessegnon starts at left back once more. This is what he wrote. Slavisa Jokanović made 2 changes once again for the visit of Watford, recalling Timothy Fosu-Mensah and Callum Chambers, but no Joe Bryan. That meant that Sessegnon, who also started at left back against Manchester City last week, was picked in that same position once more, despite Bryan being fully fit for the game. He didn't even make the bench, and while Sessegnon grew into the game, his position for the goal was erratic, and he was often overrun on the left-hand side as Watford looked to double up on him in the first half. Last season, we saw the 18-year-old play at both left-back and left-forward, playing in the latter position with deadly effect as he scored 16 goals for his club during the course of the championship season. But Jokanović has started to use him more as a left-back again this season, believing he did well against City and Raheem Sterling last week. It remains up for debate whether or not Sessegnon is better utilized for the forward or at left-back in the top flight. But with Luciano Vietto and Andre Schürrle playing so well, if Jokanović doesn't pick Sessegnon at left-back, it may mean there's no place for the wonder kid in the side at all at the moment. Okay, over to you, Max, and that is from Ryan O'Donovan. Obviously, this is a discussion on Ryan Sessegnon. What are your thoughts about this? Because this goes back to our discussion about Joe Bryan, but more importantly, I think it goes to how does Slavisa Jokanović use Ryan Sessegnon moving forward? He brings up a great point about the three up front. Where does he fit if he continues to play Vietto and Schürrle along with Mitro? Does he have to play him at left back? Do we have a change of formation? Maybe we move things around in certain matches as well. We talked about how Slavisa had tweaked with the formation in that game to a 4-2-3-1. Could that be a situation where you might see Sessegnon play a different role? So what are your thoughts about how Sessegnon was used and the impact that it has moving forward?
Yeah, you know, the Sessegnon argument is really one of the most fascinating ones around Fulham right now, and it's actually the subject of one of my next articles for the Boot Room.
Okay.
I'm going to take into a deep look into what the future holds for Sessegnon. Because you're right, he's in such a weird state right now where last season, of course, he was our top scorer from that left-wing position, only really played there for the second half of the season. But one thing about Sessegnon in that left-wing position is that, and I think why it didn't work out for him in the first couple matches in the Premier League, is that he's not a player who really grabs games by the scruff of the neck. He's not a player who's going to dominate matches. He's going to drift in and out, but when he gets his chance, he's going to take it.
He's superbly. An opportunist.
He's not, exactly. And right now at left-back, that's where Slavisa sees him in the future. You know, I've talked about this a lot in the interview over the summer. Slavisa said, I see Sessegnon's future as a Marcelo type player more than a Bale. He sees him as a top attacking left back at a top club, not as a left winger. And I think that's probably a fair assessment. I think Jokanović knows Sessegnon better than anyone else. He's the one who really nurtured him, gave him this chance in the first team. And he thinks that Sessegnon doesn't quite have, you know, the skill or the attacking creativity to play left wing in the Premier League or in a top flight. But what he does do is he's great at getting forward and getting in those spaces and finishing them off. So maybe a wing back role is more appropriate for him. Right now, at left back, I don't know if he is ready to play week in, week out at, in defense. I really liked how he played against City. And I'm going to agree a little bit, I'm going to disagree a little bit with Ryan. I don't think he was poor on Saturday. I think the positioning of the first goal, certainly you can say he got sucked in. But I think that's very much a effect of the terrible defending that led up to the goal rather than to blame Sessegnon. Sure. And I thought he was quite good. I thought he was confident. I thought there were a number of chances where he actually dispossessed Watford players and was pretty sturdy. Most notably that really nice challenge on the edge of the box on Pereira late on, where it could have easily been a penalty, but he timed it really well. So Sessegnon, I don't think there are any really easy answers right now because he's right. I think Solisa very clearly favors Vieto in that position at the moment. But one thing I would say about Vieto is I would like to see Sessegnon displace Vieto in left wing. I think Vieto, he's played very well. I'm not going to fault him at all. One thing I would say is Sessegnon's very clearly a superior finisher than Vieto. And there are chances Vieto got in really advanced positions on Saturday and didn't finish them. If that's Sessegnon, that's a goal for me. For purely that reason, I think Sessegnon should play left wing. But at the moment, I can't really fault Slavisa for not making that switch.
Okay. Very interesting situation with how to utilize Ryan Sessegnon because it can affect a few players. You just talked about Vieto. We can also talk about Joe Bryan. We've talked about this. He's a player that I think can be your left back. But in Slavisa's mind, maybe he sees a rotation with Sessegnon down the road. I don't know. Or just he's just trying to find a place for Sessegnon, trying to find a place for, like we're talking about with Vieto. It's a fascinating situation because I thought that Joe Bryan, Max, was going to be our left back. So that's why this is a little bit confusing. What are your thoughts about Bryan? Where does he fit in all this mix now?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Obviously, when you know Ryan says a player got left off the bench and he's fully fit, that's worrying to me, because if you look at the bench, I mean, you see Cyrus Christie on there, and you know he's really the only other fullback option. I think I would say, you know, I think most people would rather have Joe Bryan than Cyrus Christie on the bench. But Solisa doesn't necessarily agree with that, which is interesting for me. Yeah. If he's not being preferred to Cyrus Christie, I don't really know what's going on back there, because I think people would agree he's a more accomplished defender and you know started the first couple of matches for us in that left back position. And as I said before, you can't really pinpoint one moment where Bryan turned in a bad performance. You know, he has been substituted off when he started, which could be an indication that Solisa wasn't happy. But for what, it's kind of difficult to say. So I think it might be the situation that right now he's saying maybe you're not quite ready for the Premier League yet. I'm going to leave you out. You got to work hard and prove to me you deserve a place in the 18. Ideally, I'd like to see Joe Bryan adapt and hopefully go back into that starting lineup in the next couple of weeks. But right now, when you're being left out when you're fully fit, that's very worrying.
It is, and I really penciled him in as Fulham's left back. And then obviously we're talking about Ryan Sessegnon being up front on the left. That's how I thought it was going to be. But then we have this situation with, like we're talking about with Vieto, and there are a lot of moving parts. But Bryan is just someone that I just assumed, and I guess I shouldn't assume. So we're going to have to see how this all plays out. I would like to see him go back at left back, give him another chance and see how that works. And I hope he gets that opportunity, because I would hate to see him all of a sudden go down the pecking order to the point. I think you even mentioned like a Rafa Soares where we don't see him. He gets left out of the squad entirely. I hope that's not the situation, because I haven't seen, at least through my eyes, why he is not getting more of an opportunity. But I'm not there in training. I don't know exactly what's going on or what the thought process is, but it's just a little one that is a little bit concerning for me, because I had high hopes for Joe Bryan. Just like with Matt Target, I looked like him to be that Matt Target, play that role. And I thought it was starting that direction, but now we have another situation. So very good point for Ryan in his article to bring that up. Number two, we have to talk about, we've already talked about, it's entitled Chaos Ensues Due to Fulham's Poor Shape. This is what Ryan O'Donovan, Football.London, had as his second talking point. Quote, the first half defensive performance was a shambles and at times looked like a game of playground football. There was a lack of shape and communications on all accounts, with players breaking forward and getting out of position without any real care of the space they were leaving or the problems it would cause. At times, it looked like the back four had never met one another, let alone trained together. And Fulham were very lucky their lack of shape didn't cost them more than just one goal. The kind of stuff should be improving as each day goes by, but this was the worst that I've seen Fulham in terms of defensive shape, and it will leave Jokanović pulling his hair out. You need to be tactically disciplined in the Premier League, and today, Fulham weren't. On another day, they could have been blown away by a different team. Okay, so we're talking about the shape of the team. Your thoughts about what Ryan wrote there?
Yeah, so much of that is down to just no one's familiar with each other. He made the point that it's like they never even met each other, but I mean, that's obviously an exaggeration, but you can see where he's going because we've used a different formation in almost every single, I think in every single match, you would say.
Yeah.
You know, there hasn't been a consistent back four, back five at all. No, everyone's been switching out. I mean, even from last match, you know, Adoy came out of the starting lineup and Chambers came in, and of course that backfired. And, you know, Christie came out and Foster Menza came in. There's just not consistency, which, you know, we almost took for granted at times during the second half of last season. We knew exactly what the squad would be, with the exception of the right wing position.
Right.
10 other players, it was nailed on who would start. And this kind of takes us back to, you know, the earlier Slavisa days. I remember doing shows the last fall, almost a year back from now. And we'd always be talking about what formation Slavisa would use. And I remember a particular match, you know, the home match against Bristol City on Halloween, where that was probably one of the low points of the fall when he lost 2-0 at home. And Slavisa tried out that 3-5-2 formation, which I remember I was really crying out for. A lot of fans were crying out
that,
for it. Yeah, saying, play 3-5-2. It's seemed perfect for our system. You know, we'll get Seth in attacking, whatnot, et cetera. And it really backfired, and we lost 2-0. It was an absolute mess. It just goes to show that, you know, we really took it for granted, you know, that we have a consistent starting 11. And right now we're seeing it's very difficult when you bring in new players and you don't know what your best team is. You know, it's late September. You would have expected we're going to have at least somewhat of a settled squad right now. But it's just almost like Slavisa bingo, you know, some have said, what the starting 11 is going to be. And until we can find that consistent, I mean, just got to focus on the back four right now.
Sure.
Because we know Betts is going to be there. We just need a consistent center back pairing, and we need consistent fullbacks. And without that, I think these problems are really going to continue.
Lack of continuity. And I find it interesting that Ryan mentioned players really acting like they don't know each other. And that's actually a good point that he brought up. It's very interesting. And his third talking point goes right with this. And it's entitled Defensive Concerns Continue. Because we're talking about the shape and obviously we're talking about the defensive issues. This is what Ryan wrote. Quote, and that leads on to defensive concerns. Fulham have conceded the second most amount of goals in the Premier League this season, only one behind Cardiff City and Huddersfield Town. Things don't seem to be getting any better. Watford could have scored a bagful in the first half, and another day probably would have. But you don't get the sense that Fulham are comfortable defending whatsoever in this division. Dennis Adoy came on and added some stability in the back line, but there were still times sloppy errors nearly saw them concede, like when Chambers gave the ball away cheaply, allowing Troy Deeney to run one-on-one with Marcus Bettinelli before Adoy got back to clear the danger. It has to improve, and the improvement has to start immediately. The side may have a strong attack, but if they continue defending like they have done in the first six games of the season, they'll find it very hard not to get dragged into a relegation dogfight. And there is the word that I don't want to hear, honestly, relegation. And, of course, he's talking dogfight, battle, whatever you want to call it. I don't want to hear it, but he brings up a valid point. If you keep on having these issues, Max, it could get into that battle. We don't want to be there, so they have to fix this issue. But this goes with the lack of shape, the continuity. So here we are. We're talking about the defensive issues, and it really comes down to the mistakes that they continue to make. I'm glad that he brought up the Chambers mistake. These mistakes can really hurt you and cause goals. And thankfully, in this case, it didn't.
Yeah, and I really have one response to that, and that's Tim Ream. When Tim Ream comes back,
let's hope.
We're all hoping
that everything changes.
Yeah. There's an old saying that goes, when a player is out injured, his quality increases like fivefold, you know. Whenever a player is out and we're all thinking, oh, he's going to come back and change it, his estimation almost increases in our minds because he becomes this almost like messiah figure who returns and is going to make everything okay. And with Tim Ream, I think maybe that's a bit unfair because he was our player of the season last season.
Yep.
But I think right now we're expecting a lot of him when he comes back.
Yeah.
And it's almost similar to the Mawson situation, right? Ream has been injured for the first like month and a half, whatever the season, similar to Mawson. And when Mawson came back, he wasn't the defender we thought he would be. And I think we have to prepare ourselves for that with Tim Ream. When he comes back, he's not going to be match fit. He's not going to be up to speed immediately. And we might have to wait a couple of matches before he returns to full fitness and becomes his old self. So that's another worrying proposition. He's not just going to come right back in the team and make everything okay. He's not going to be Captain America from the off. So another thing to consider that, you know, these players are coming back from injury and it takes a while to return to your top form.
This is true. And we are putting a lot of stock into the return of Tim Ream. But as a player that we've watched a great deal, Max, I think that he can bring that calming effect that they really need at this point. Will he be back to the player that he was last season off of this injury? I think that, like you mentioned, it takes time. But I think sooner than later, we need to see that and see how it all works. I think Savisa needs to see it as well, because this whole situation defensively needs to settle. Or, like Ryan said, I don't want to talk about the word, but we will be getting dragged into something that I don't want Fulham to get dragged into. So they need to fix this issue, and maybe he's a main cog of it. Only time will tell. But, again, it's a good point to bring up all of the defensive issues, because I think when you look at all the good potential that Fulham have, the one thing holding them back, and it's a major thing, is the defensive issues. So very good for Ryan as that being his third talking point. That really goes with his second talking point. His fourth talking point is this. So Savisa Yokanovic's halftime substitutes. Obviously, we've talked about this, and this is what Ryan wrote. Fulham need a change at halftime, and Savisa Yokanovic provided it by bringing on Odoi and Fuadeyite in place of Alfie Mawson and Kevin McDonald. They raised eyebrows at the time, but Odoi cut a composed figure in the heart of defense, providing some solidity in the otherwise flimsy back four. With his ability to get on the ball and play football meant that Fulham had a base from which to build their attacks upon. Ayite's introduction meant that Stefan Johansson and Jean-Michel Seri could sit deeper as a defensive midfield pairing, cutting the space that Watford were exploiting between Fulham's midfield and defense in the first half. That allowed Luciano Vietto and Andre Schürrle to combine even more than they have done in the past, with Schürrle sitting at the top of the flat three that include Ayite on the left and Vietto on the right. The pair caused problems going forward after the break, with Vietto laying the ball on a play for Alexander Mitrovic to net his fifth of the season and get a point for Fulham. Yokanovic was quick to play down his role in making the substitutions and credited his side with turning the game around. But the head coach deserves as much credit as anyone else for his role in the turnaround. Totally agree. We've talked about this on the post-match show. Your thoughts about what Ryan writes here, I think it backs up what we talked about.
Yeah, and I'm going to focus on the Odoi point, because I think a lot has been made of Odoi's defensive performance, and rightfully so. He was excellent. And one other part of his game, which I don't think gets enough credit, is he is a player who can start an attack, similar to Tim Ream. When Odoi's on the ball, the attack starts on him and starts on the ground. With players like Mawson and Chambers, their first instinct might be play more of a diagonal, lofted ball in the air, which is much less successful and might be go out of bounds or get dispossessed. With Odoi, he's using this new trend of center backs nowadays, where he really takes the ball from the back and dribbles forward, because teams are going to lay back in space. He attacks that space, plays it out wide to the fullbacks, or plays it up front to our attacking players, and really drives and takes his space and really starts our attack higher up the pitch than most traditional center backs would, because he's quite comfortable with the ball at his feet, just like Ream. He can kickstart attacks on the ground and start attacking possession-based football, you know, from a more recessed position. So that's also another part of his game that I think really adds to Fulham's play.
Okay, very good. I'm glad that you mentioned that. And when we look back at this match, maybe in half a season or so, if we ever look back here, I'm going to remember the substitutes at the half, because they really made a difference. And I'm glad that he did that. We also saw a tweak to the shape where we went to 4-2-3-1. Very good by you to mention what you just did and, of course, what Ryan wrote. Final point is a pretty obvious talking point. Alexander Mitrovic scores again. Max, as you mentioned, he's scored more goals than Newcastle United have scored as a team, which is amazing. I love that stat. This is what Ryan wrote. Another game, another Mitrovic goal. He's in red-hot form for Fulham and sits at the top of the goal-scoring charts alongside Chelsea's Eden Hazard as he's continued his form from last season. If anyone needs to see it again, yesterday proved just how important Mitrovic is to the way Fulham play, and it's probably the key to them staying up this season. It's clear that he loves Fulham and that Fulham loves him. Long may that continue. Okay, we've talked about Mitro. On top of that, there's been some speculation linking Mitro with Chelsea, that they could be interested in him. And Ryan actually wrote an article talking about Diego Costa, that role, and Mitro's role with Fulham. But I'm glad that Ryan here is talking about how Mitro loves Fulham. And for people that are concerned that he might leave, I think it's going to be very difficult for him to leave personally. This is just my opinion, Max, because it's such a good fit. He obviously sees that. He loves the club. The fans love him. And I just think it's a love fest. I find this hard to see Alexander Mitrovic leaving us anytime soon, let alone in January, even for the other club in Fulham. And I'm glad that Ryan is writing about this. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, for Mitrovic to succeed, he needs a number of factors. He's a player who needs to start basically every match, and he's a player who needs to feel loved by the fans, and he's a player who needs to have a manager who trusts him.
Right.
And he has all three of those things at Fulham, and that's why I think he's such a good fit, as you mentioned.
Exactly.
If he moves to a bigger club like Chelsea, as there have been links, you said, he's not going to have that security. He's not going to have that trust, and he's not going to have that same relationship with Maurizio Sarri that he has with Slavisa Kanovic. So that's why I agree with you. I just cannot see him moving to a bigger club, at least not this early in his career at this moment. He just loves Fulham, and the best thing about it is, you know, you can see the passion. I mean, when he was just yelling yes into the camera after, right, looking at the hand end in such joy after scoring the equalizer. You see what this club means to him. And he was even, you know, tapping the badge after scoring a goal against Sunderland last season in April, when he wasn't even a Fulham player yet, when he was still on loan. And you could really tell then that he was going to be a special, special talent and a player who truly fights for Fulham, loves Fulham. And I can't see him going to Chelsea. I think that's ridiculous, honestly.
So do I, but I just find it interesting that we keep seeing links. And again, I've been seeing it for a few days now. So this is just something that I think is going to happen because he's a player in form, and the line that may continue, but that doesn't mean that he's going to leave, even if clubs are interested. I just want to mention that because it will continue. It wouldn't just be Chelsea that would be the last team that would be linked to him. And boy, would you like to be a fan of Newcastle right now, thinking about what could have been? But that's a different system, and that also plays to what you're talking about, Max, because there's all this talk about did Newcastle make a mistake. I'm going to change my mind on this. I was saying that they did make a mistake by doing that. No, they didn't make a mistake because it didn't work with him and Benitez in the system. It was a bad fit. This is the perfect fit. So for him to leave, it was right for both teams.
Yeah, and Benitez is a manager who he's going to be stubborn. It's my way or the highway.
Right.
And if Mitrovic didn't work there, I mean, you can't fault them for saying, listen, it's not going to work out. You have to leave. That being said, I think it's foolish that, you know, Rafa has that mentality because obviously Mitrovic is a player of some considerable talent. But just by the fact that he's top scorer in the Premier League, I don't care if he doesn't fit in your system. I think you change your system to accommodate someone who's scored more goals than your entire club has all season. You know, that to me, I think you're right. If they're going to be stubborn and close-minded about it, then sure, let him leave. Let him flourish at a club where he's going to be appreciated. But the question has to be, why didn't you appreciate him? Why didn't you see this talent that was right? That was right before your eyes. And that's going to be a big failing of Newcastle United, honestly.
It's a tough one because if you're a fan of that team and you're thinking, why didn't it work? And you see the goals he's scoring for Fulham and you're thinking, why didn't it happen for us? You have to look at your team straight in the face and say, ask yourself that question. And it, again, It's fascinating because this is the fit. This goes back to why I can see Mitro being with Fulham for a while, because the situation just works so well. It's the perfect fit. All right, my friend, let's now go to player ratings. Let's go to Ryan's player ratings and see if they match up with what you rate these players. We've talked a great deal about a lot of these players, so we'll just go a little bit more into it. Let's start with Marcus Bettinelli. Ryan O'Donovan from Football.London gives him a 7. This is what he says. A strong performance from the keeper, who was commanding of his area, made some important saves. Largely a spectator in the second half. Your thoughts. Do you agree with Ryan's rating?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be an 8, I thought. Yeah. Without him, again, similar to what we said last week, it could have been a lot worse, and we could have lost this match. The two saves that really jump out to me is the one-on-one from Andre Gray when, Mawson had that terrible backhead. What was he thinking there? That almost was a certain goal for me. And then the other one was later on, Isaac's success almost won it very late for Watford. Right. And Bettinelli got very well saved. I've talked about Bettinelli a lot. I'm not going to harp on again, but just again, he is a Premier League goalkeeper, and I'm just very glad he got his opportunity to show that.
Again, I'll say it. He's proven me wrong. He's doing a great job, and I'm happy to see it. I'm happy to say I was wrong.
But Russ, I'm not going to say – I think you might say that, but I don't think – you're not the problem here. I think you were always willing to give him a chance. Yeah. There's some people who would say, listen, you can't say anything bad about Fabry. Because there are people who are – you were very much reasonable in your opinion. Yeah. I looked on Twitter, and there are people even now who were posting stats that Bettinelli had the worst save percentage of starting keepers in the Premier League, and they're still actively trying to belittle Bettinelli's achievements in the face of his good performances. And that's just mind-boggling for me. Some people almost seem like they had an agenda against him, which just makes no sense for me, considering how Bettinelli's – I mean, he's a player that's ultimately so likable, and he's such a good Fulham success story. I just don't understand why people are still trying to find the faults in his performances now.
The only thing I can think of is that they prefer Fulham to look at these other two goalkeepers, like you mentioned, Fabry and Rico, that they spent this money. Why not look at one of these other goalkeepers? I know one's on loan. And because we talked about before, Max, everyone's looking for upgrades in several positions. And many fans, including myself, thought that goalkeeper was a place where you needed to upgrade. But here's the thing. If you have a player that's not letting you upgrade the position because they're raising their game, you have to give them credit. That's the way that I've always looked at it. And Marcus Bettinelli, I wasn't sure if he could be a Premier League goalkeeper. He deserves the credit. And we can look at stats all we want. And this is my whole thing with stats. I think that they can be extremely helpful. But your eyes, I think, should be the first thing you look at. What do your eyes tell you when you're watching him? And I know we're just watching so far away here in the United States, but we can get a good sense for what's going on there. And someone that's there and, sees it right in front of them, they obviously get a very good sense. How could they be against what's going on with what they're seeing? Because Marcus Bettinelli is getting the job done, and you have to give him credit. That's just the way I look at it. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Ryan Sessegnon. Started off by talking with him with Ryan's article on his talking points. He was a part of it. He gives Ryan Sessegnon a 5. This is what Ryan O'Donovan wrote. Positioning was all over the place for Watford's first goal. Struggled with the left flank as Watford looked to double up the youngster. We've talked about this. He did focus a lot on that first goal, but there's plenty to blame to go. Do you think 5 is a correct rating, or would you go higher or lower?
I think, again, Ryan's being a bit harsh. Maybe I'd say probably 6.5, maybe 7 for Sessegnon. I was honestly impressed by him. I think the one I mentioned earlier was, very late on, he timed the challenge right on the edge of the penalty area so well. If he mistimes that, that's a penalty, very late on, and Watford gets on to win it. But he showed a lot more composure, I think, most others in that back four today, with the exception of Adoy. And I thought he got forward to good effect, too. I think his role in the goal was probably a bit underestimated. He makes the run after Sherlock's shots get deflected. And I think that causes Janmaat just to maybe second guess where Vieto is. And if you look at the challenge, Janmaat kind of goes in weak to that Vieto challenge when Vieto kind of heads it by him. And I think that's because he's almost thinking, where's Sessegnon?
Right.
Is it right for me to fully commit to this challenge knowing Sessegnon's kind of right behind me? And that might have led to his hesitation, and that might have led to the goal. So again, kind of Sessegnon getting into good attacking positions. I'm going to give him a 6.5.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's talk about these two players together. I want to do it together because people have asked me about both of the center backs, so I thought it's fair to talk about them together, but let's rate them separately, and let's talk about them separately. Let's talk about Callum Chambers and Alfie Mawson. Now, Ryan O'Donovan gave them both a 4. This is what Ryan O'Donovan from Football.London said about Chambers, and then I'll mention what he said about Mawson. Looked really uncomfortable on the left side of the center back partnership in the first half. Did better in the second half, but Fulham's positional play was all over the place, and he looked prone to a mistake. That was Chambers. What he says about Mawson, gave the ball away too easily at times and struggled with the physical presence of Deeney up top. Was hauled off at halftime for Odoi. So those are his ratings. They're both the same 4. So let's talk about both. Do you agree with these two ratings? Let me just say, for me, I want to separate the two of them a little bit because I think Callum Chambers was a little bit better than Alfie Mawson. Not that he was good. He was a little bit better in my book. And I think Savisa backs it up because he took off Mawson. But as we also know, Savisa had said that he could have taken off more players. And I don't know if he would have taken off Chambers if he had the opportunity. He picked Mawson. I thought that was the right player to take off, honestly. So let's talk about the ratings for both of these players and share your thoughts on them.
Mawson was clearly the worst player, as you mentioned, so I might even venture to give him a 3.5.
Okay.
Just due to his – they're both very culpable for the first goal. So that's a disaster. They just had no idea what they were doing. The ball bounced off them. They lost their man. It was just a horror show. You know, from a throw-in situation to a goal is always disappointing. None of them looked confident in the back. But I think Mawson has to be singled out for worse because, as you mentioned, he was brought off at halftime. Whenever a player gets brought up at halftime, let alone a defender, yeah, let alone a center half, that's just so rare. And that showed you it was really an exceptionally poor performance. And again, the one that really sticks out to me because it was just ridiculous was his back header that was easily intercepted. Because, I mean, Mawson is a player who just should not be doing that, who's played in the Premier League. He's played a couple of seasons in the Premier League. I mean, he's played the England youth level. He should know better than that. He should know his awareness. And that's just very disappointing to see. And he just wasn't good all half. How much of that is due to him coming back from injury? How much of that is due to him not really being comfortable yet? You know, it's unclear. But the major disappointment for me was because Mawson and Chambers, a lot have been made of how they'd played together at, you know, England under 21 level. These are players who supposedly should know how each other play, should know their tendencies, should be a good partnership. And they're really anything but. Chambers, I'd say, slightly better, probably a 4.5 for me. But again, neither of them I don't think neither of them is going to keep their starting place next weekend, honestly.
Okay, very good. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Timothy Fosu-Mensah. Ryan O'Donovan from Football.London gives him a 6. This is what he wrote. Took a while to get into the game, but started to cause problems down the flank as the first half wore on. Had a very hot and cold game. Your thoughts about the rating here?
I think 6 is very fair. I thought, you know, first half, I don't think he was great, but second half, we saw a number of those lung-bursting runs that were honestly excellent. I thought service was a bit lacking when he got down to the byline, but the fact that he blew past 4 players on one instance, and he shows, like, when he does have that freedom to attack, he can be so dangerous for us. We don't always see that from the off. So it would be interesting to see if Salisa gives him a bit more freedom in the coming matches to bomb down the right wing more because I think he can be a really good asset for us.
Totally agree, Max. You know, it's funny because I think about this all the time. Losing Ryan Fredericks, I think we've upgraded here. I know this player is on loan, but I see much more potential in Mensah than I do in Ryan Fredericks. Would you agree with that?
And it's a good statement. I think both are players who rely a lot on pace, and both are very much attacking minded. But I would venture to say Fosu-Mensah is probably more solid defensively.
Right.
And going forward, I don't think he has quite. Frederick has exceptional pace. I think that's what really sets him apart in the attacking sense. Sure. But Fosu-Mensah, I think, almost has more attacking composure at times. So I would agree with you. And he's a younger player with more room to adapt.
Right.
But, you know, he is a Manchester United player, and that kind of shows. You know, he is probably going to be a top club for the foreseeable future. I don't know if we can sign him permanently. That's a long way away. But he does have a better, I think, background.
Totally agree. And I just see his potential, his upside is higher than Ryan Fredericks. You know what you have with Ryan Fredericks. He's pretty established. I still think we're learning what you actually have with Timothy Fosu-Mensah. And he's a lone player, so we'll see how that all works out. But I do like what we could see from him moving forward. I still think that there's a lot of growth there. That's why I wanted to talk about the difference between him and Fredericks from last season, where you know what you're going to get with that guy. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Jean-Michel Seri. Ryan O'Donovan gives him a 7. This is what he said. Got on the ball and looked decent, making some good tackles on the edge of the air while moving the ball nicely to get the side moving forward. Agree or disagree?
He was, I'm going to say 6. I thought he was good for sure, but again, not really what I expected of him. I think you can't really pick apart any big flaws in his game, but I don't know if it's unfair or not, but let me know, Russ. I just expect a player of his quality to really shine above in matches like this. I think if you look at the quality of the players in the pitch, he's the most talented.
Right.
I think in matches like this, he should be by far and away our best player. Best player in both teams, honestly. It's at home, possession-based side. He should dictate the match more and create more going forward. I'm going to be a bit harsh on him just because I expect more of him, because I know how good he can be. I just didn't see all of that on Saturday, but he didn't play poorly by any means. And his passing, his good vision led to the goal in some way. So I'm going to say 6.
Okay. I understand why you went there, because the expectations for several reasons are that he should be at a higher level. Our best player talent-wise, I think he is. So you expect him to be at this elite level each and every match. He's still new to the Premier League, and I'm going to cut him just a little slack on that to be at this elite player each and every match. He's learning his way through it. And I think as we get through the season, Max, you'll see the more consistent performances that I think you're looking for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure, for sure. And you made a good point. I mean, we sometimes we forget with all of our new players.
A lot of them,
a lot of them have zero Premier League experience at all. It's so difficult to adapt to England.
Yeah.
Probably the best case example of that, I mention this a lot.
Yep.
But Abubakar Kamara, a player who I think a lot of us hold in high regard now, I certainly do, but really looked so out of depth early on, but we knew he had the talent. So even for much more talented players, it's always going to be very difficult to adapt to England.
Absolutely, and we'll be talking about a player in just a bit. Anguissa, I think he's a stereotypical person for this discussion because I can see the potential that he has, and I also see that he needs to learn what he can and what he can't do. And I think that comes with experience playing in the Premier League. I see the potential, but he needs to learn how to adapt to the Premier League. And once he does, I think he's going to be very good for us. It's just a matter of getting used to it. And Seri, same thing. I just see all the potential. He will be an elite player. It's just a matter of him adapting to the Premier League. That's my feelings on that. All right, Max, let's talk about these two players together. I think it's important. We've talked a great deal about Kevin McDonald and Stefan Johansson. Can they play in the Premier League after playing the Championship, being such great players for us last season? So let's talk about them together. And Ryan O'Donovan gives Kevin McDonald a 4. He gives Stefan Johansson a 5. So those are the ratings for these two players. This is what Ryan O'Donovan says about McDonald. Struggled to plug the gap between the defense and the midfield and left his defense way too open to Watford's attackers. Was subbed at halftime. Johansson, Ryan gives a 5. Poor performance from Johansson, who struggled with the intensity of the game. Better second half performance from the Norwegian, but was subbed on the 63rd minute mark. And in my opinion, you could have subbed Stefan Johansson at halftime as well. He waited a little bit longer. I do understand that. You know, again, making 3 substitutes at the same time is a risk. But I think, you know, and again, this goes back to the discussion earlier on that Savisa was talking about. He could have subbed off more players, and I think potentially Johansson could have been one of those players. So what are your thoughts about the ratings here for these two players? And, you know, again, I like both of these players. I do. But I'm just starting to get very concerned about how they fit into Fulham's plans the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think the ratings are spot on. Kevin McDonald, he's just too slow. He's too slow to play in the Premier League, and that's just an uncomfortable fact. And Johansson, I think you made a good point. He could have easily been taken out of halftime. Both these players could have been subbed off.
Yeah.
But interestingly, I thought he, as Ryan said, he had a better second half. And I think there were times when we saw what Johansson is in the team for, and that's to make the hard challenges and break up Watford play. I remember he made a really nice, strong challenge on Pereira on one occasion, as well as just being a bit more aggressive, which is what we need from him. So that was nice to see. That's why I think he probably gets a 5 over McDonald's 4. But yeah, as I said, McDonald, he's too slow. He's not mobile. He's not a Premier League player. I'm sorry.
It's hard because I agree with you. And he's one of my favorite players. And it's difficult to come to that realization when you look at someone. And I still think he has a role. I think they both have a role, but it should be as a substitute or start in certain situations where Savisa thinks that they could be used against a certain opponent. But to start each and every match or to be a regular starter, I just don't see it in the Premier League. And that hurts me to say. But that's the reality when you make the step up to the Premier League. And Fulham brought in a bunch of these players as upgrades. And I think these two players have competition because they were looking for upgrades. And that's just the bottom line. You know, again, have some role. I just can't see the role being as a starter on a regular basis. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Vieto, Luciano Vieto. We talked about him at the beginning of the show. And Ryan O'Donovan gives him a 7. This is what he wrote. Looked decent going forward, especially on the counterattack. Saw a lot of the ball in the second half and looked the likeliest to make something happen up front. So 7 is the rating for him. I've actually been going back and forth with a Fulham fan in Spain who has doubts about Vieto because of his lack of scoring ability in his past. And again, there's no like real consistency when it comes to him scoring goals. But I see his value, regardless of how many goals he's scored and what he offers Fulham, as being part of that 3 up front. I like Vieto. That's why I'm struggling with the Sessegnon and Vieto situation, because I see Vieto's potential ability for the rest of the season, Max. I think we might disagree a little bit on his impact, but I like seeing him. I think he's a player that Savisa should be starting on a regular basis. Some might disagree with me on this, but I like what I see from Vieto, even if the goals aren't going to be what you would expect from a player that's playing in his position.
It's a tough one because I think the Sessegnon and Vieto debate is a good one. I think they almost offer polar opposites in what they excel at. Vieto is exceptional in build-up play. His eye for a pass is superb, and he offers so much that energy and feel of the attack. He's going to get involved a lot. But when it comes to being in front of goal, he goes missing, and I think he's a very inconsistent finisher.
Right.
Probably the biggest example of that. Yeah, when Chirla put him through in that first half, you got to score that 1-1. You simply have to. I'm sorry. Sessegnon, he scores that. Sessegnon's almost the opposite. I don't think Sessegnon offers as much in terms of build-up play. But when he gets in front of goal, he gets in superb positions, and he's probably the best natural finisher I've seen in a very long time. We haven't seen him a lot getting in front of goal in the Premier League, but when he's given those opportunities, he takes them just with lethal accuracy, which is something Vieto lacks. So it's that flip side, you know, which would you value more? I think Vieto's assist on Saturday, that's going to give him a 7 for me. Very, very good eye for a pass. As I mentioned on the post-match show, his tenacity and willingness to put his head out there in a dangerous position to touch it past Janmaat to get to the ball initially first, very impressive. And he really put it on a plate for Mitro.
He did, and I really see what he can bring up front. I think he's dangerous. But to my friend in Spain's credit, he's not a true proven goal scorer. He's not someone that, at this point, we've seen able to do it. He's had his opportunity. So that's the fallback on it. And then, of course, you bring up the point, Sessegnon probably scored some of the goals that Vieto hasn't been able to. So it's this interesting situation. What's more important to you? The player that is going to be part of that build-up play and set things up for his teammates, or the player on the left that can actually score the goals also when you need them to, but might not be as big a part as that build-up play? That's a fascinating situation. I like Vieto, and I'll just be the first to say it, but I see why some people are critical of him because of the lack of goals that we've opportunities he had so far to score goals. All right, let's now talk about Andre Schürrle. 7 for him from Ryan. This is what he said. Decent game from the German, who looked good out on the left wing when in possession of the ball. Moved to top of the diamond in the second half and did all right. Do you think he just did all right there, Max? He gives him a 7. I'm talking about with a switch in the second half.
I thought he was more effective in that central role, but I thought he did well. So a bit better.
That's what I did.
Yeah. But again, you know, you like to see him score a goal. He's always going to take a lot of shots. I think the performance really can be capped off with a goal would have been best for him. But I think he was a lot more in the match, a lot more dangerous when he got played in the defensive role. So, you know, that really begs the question, you know, is a 4-2-3-1 perhaps the best system for us? And that can be really interesting because I think I would like to see Schürrle maybe in a more advanced role. And then I think that is kind of the perfect way for me to get Schürrle, Vietto, and Sessegnon all involved. Because I don't think Aiyite is going to be preferred in front of Sessegnon. So let's say that obviously Micho is up top and that three midfield behind them is Sessegnon, Schürrle, and Vietto. That could be a very interesting formation. I'm wondering what you think of that.
I like that. But here's the thing that we're going to have to consider. And while you're saying all this, and I agree with everything that you're saying, we're forgetting about a player that's going to be coming back soon. That's going to give Savisa another quandary to consider. What happens when Tom Kearney returns?
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. I think my answer is, I don't know if this leaves us a bit exposed as a back, but I'd say maybe you play Kearney and Sebri as your holding midfielders.
Possibly.
Yeah, possibly. It's interesting. But yeah, so many good points, you know. We have a lot of players coming back with a lot of players on the bench. Where does that leave Anguissa? Where does that leave McDonald, you know?
That's right.
So, but yeah, it's a lot to consider. And then, of course, that formation assumes you're playing Joe Bryan, which Lavisa looks like he does not want to at all.
A lot of moving parts here, my friend.
A lot of moving parts. Who would want to be a manager? You know, it's a difficult job.
But it's fun to think about. That's why I'm throwing Kearney back to the mix, because that's another situation. And, you know, again, he comes back, you know, because you're thinking that Kearney would play the Schürrle role. So that makes things interesting. So what do you do? It's a fascinating discussion. That's why I'm glad we're talking about this, because I actually like the option at some point to play 4-2-3-1. But you have a lot of moving parts. You do. You have a lot of different ways you can do that. All right, let's talk about Mitro. We know Mitro is going to be part of any formation that you do. Ryan O'Donovan gives him a 7. This is what he said. Was a physical presence up top, but form looked to him too much and have him no support to win the second ball. Got his goal, which was deserved from his performance. Okay, so he gives him a 7. Can I just say I would go a little bit higher, but I understand where Ryan's going, because it took him a while to finally get the goal. And then, of course, at the end of the match, I thought he was dominant. But what are your thoughts on a 7? Is Ryan right here?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's an 8 or maybe even higher. I thought he was by far and away our best attacker, our most dangerous player all match was Mitrovic. And the second half was, I think, very, very, very good. I think he had almost 4 or 5 decent opportunities. Of course, he's got his great goal. He hit the bar. He had another header that went slightly over. And he had that wonderful long range shot that Foster tipped wide. He showed almost every part of his play, his ability to get his head in the ball, his ability to get on low crosses, which I think is sometimes overlooked because everyone focuses on his heading ability. And then he showed his ability to strike from long range and provide a danger from distance. So for me, it was almost the ideal second half. It would have been a lot better, of course, if he had that header just a little bit lower to get a late winner. But for me, it's an 8.5 for Mitrovic.
Okay, and I understand why you went so high. All right, let's do the substitutes all together. I think they all played a role here. And Ryan O'Donovan gives Dennis Odoi a 7, gives Floyd Aiyite a 6, and he gives Andre Frank Zambo and Gisa a 6. And this is what he wrote. Dennis Odoi, like I said, this is what Ryan said, added some solidity to the defense when he came on at halftime and dealt with Deeney reasonably well, despite his size. Aiyite, this is what he said, did fairly well after coming on, saw lots of the ball. And while a few touches were loose, he had a decent game. This is what he said about Anguissa. Was caught in possession in dangerous area almost immediately, which nearly proved costly as Deeney powered through on goal. So Anguissa, a 6, Aiyite, a 6, and Odoi, a 7. Your thoughts?
I agree with Anguissa and Aiyite. I think 6 is fair for them. They made a really good impact, but still had some parts of their match which were lacking, but I think a 6 is fair. And for Dora, I'd say 7.5-8 range, because I really think he's been a dark horse or man of the match for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And undoubtedly, he changed the match. He did what Alfie Mawson could not do. And it's I just always like to marvel at a Doi, because so many times he could have been written off. You know, we talk about, I feel like, 2017 or even the winter of 2016, people are saying he could have been shipped back. He was very close to moving back to Belgium. A lot of people, I certainly didn't think he'd play a role at all in the Premier League, you know, after sending off at Wembley. And look at here he is now. He's arguably one of our most assured defenders. So full credit to Dennis Odoi. I think he's a very likable guy and a defender who proves a lot of people wrong very consistently.
Okay, very good. Before we wrap up, I want to go back and talk about Anguissa, because during our conversation earlier on, we were talking about Sarri, you know, being up to this level, being an elite player, learning the Premier League. I think Anguissa is one of these players, Max, that just needs time to learn what he can and can't do. I've said that already. If you looked at that situation where he gave away the ball, I think that's a perfect situation that we're talking about, of him not learning yet what he can and what he can't do.
Yeah, he's very much one for the future. And I think a lot of people kind of forget, although what people see is that big price tag we paid for him, you know, around £25 million. And they say, if we pay that money, he has to be in the team. There's no use having him on the bench. You know, it's a waste of money. But he's only 22 years old.
I know.
He's a young player adapting to the Premier League. Give him time. He can't start every match week in, week out. And he's going to take time to get used to England, because it's so much different than France. It's so different.
That's why I wanted to bring it up, because you expect, because of the price tag, this is part of the problem, that they're just going to be up and running and being at this elite level. And same thing with Sarri. You're just expecting it because they paid all this money. Mawson, they paid all this money. All these players you are expecting to be at an elite level because of the money spent. Doesn't always work that way. Sometimes you have to give players a chance. And I always use this player as an example, as a reminder of how a player can flourish. And that is, again, a couple players. I'll say Clint Dempsey's one of them. You know, I will say the other bigger example would be Bobby Zamora. Now, remember Bobby Zamora's first season at Fulham? He didn't score the goals and came under a good amount of criticism because he didn't score the goals. Next season, he scored the goals. He needed time to adapt to how Fulham play under Roy Hodgson. It took time for the goals to come. And the fact that he was given that time, he finally flourished in Fulham's system. So I'm saying this about Sarri. I'm saying this about a lot of these players. Give them some time to learn how Savisa wants them to play and also how they're going to play within the Premier League. And let's see them grow. Don't give up on these players so early on, because you might, you know, be disappointed. You know, and I always think that, you know, each player, Max, and this is how we'll finish up the show, has their own ability of when they become the player that they're going to be for your team. Some pick it up right away. Some from the get-go, you know what you have. Other players, it just takes time to adapt. And my only point in ending the show like this is, when we look at some of these players and we understand that the price tags are high on some of these players, give them a chance to adapt before you label them a bust or you label them as they're just not good enough, they're not what I expected. Sometimes you need half a season, a full season, to really learn what you have in a player. And I would just go back to Bobby Zamora, Max.
Yeah, it's a great point to harken back to, because whenever you move places, even if it's within the same league, there's always going to be, you know, a culture shock, adapting, and some players take longer than others. And we have to consider it's only September. You know, it's still very early on in the season. This time last year, where were we? I think either we were losing to Burton or losing to Wolves. We were at our very lowest. So we know how much a season can change. We know how much players can change. So I know it's very hard to reserve judgment. I always find it difficult to do it, but we all have to remember it's still very early on. We have a long way to go.
A very long way to go. And I will just add one more point on this, because people look at Fulham and just remember the common thread with Slavisa Jokanovic's teams in the championship, those two full seasons, not the one where he came in mid-season. Those two seasons, they both started fairly slow. The first full season, they started hot, but then they went through that cool streak. But it really took a while before they started to gain momentum. Last season, they started slow from the get-go. And then it just built and built and built. And I think part of it has to do with, this is just my opinion, the system that you play, getting comfortable within it, and learning how to use that in the week. I'm talking about the solidity of all of your players playing as a unit. It takes time. The possession-based style, I think, takes time to really come together. So remember that when you're watching this team, because I truly believe the second half of the season, we're going to see some special things from this Fulham side. And I'm not backing down that I can still see Fulham end in 10th. People laughing at me. I will continue to say it because I see the potential that this team has. There is so much upside to this team. People will point to Wolves and see how they are right now in the Premier League. You know, again, last season, they were the best team throughout the season in the Championship. But look at the end of the season. I can argue that Fulham were the better side the second half of that season, even though Wolves won the league. Fulham came on like crazy. And I'm going to say this right now. I think that there's a potential that it could happen again with Fulham and Wolves. We'll see if I'm right, because I think there's more upside to how Fulham play than how Wolves play. Wolves are a great team, and they have it down. They know who they are. Let's see when Fulham know who they are, who's the better team. I'll leave you with that. Max, great show, my friend. Fantastic show. Any final words before we go?
Yeah, final words. I just like to say I love what you're saying about Fulham and Wolves, and just a point about that. You know, so little is going to separate 10th from 15th, let's say, in the Premier League season. It's so tight. I can easily say, saying finishing 10th, it sounds like a lot. It's really not that lot. I agree with you there.
Just also, remember Crystal Palace last season.
Exactly. Yeah. Also, let's just talk about Watford for a second, because I feel like
we
need to put in perspective who we were playing.
Yep.
Watford beat Brighton 2-0. They beat Burnley 3-1. They beat Palace 2-1. They beat Tottenham 2-1. And then they lost to United, and they drew us. This is a team who won four of its first four matches, beat teams like Tottenham, beat a team we lost to in Palace, beat a team we drew with in Brighton. This result, I think, a lot of fans, for whatever reason, thought it would be a win, thought we had to win it. A draw is a very good result, considering how well this Watford team started. And we're only the second team in the Premier League to take points off them. That needs to be said more often. Overall, looking back, the point gets better and better as I look at it. You know, next season, away at Everton, this is a team that lost at home to West Ham, the first points of the season. We put in a pretty meek away performance to Arsenal, who played Huddersfield, and I think drew at home to Huddersfield, or did not play well at all against Huddersfield. We can go to Goodison Park, maybe for the first time in a very long time, and hopefully expect to win.
I cannot wait to talk about that, because you are on my wavelength when it comes to Everton. And I know the history, and I will just say that records were meant to be broken. That's all I'm going to say on that. We'll see. We'll see on that. I think that there's an opportunity there, and we'll talk about that during the week, and we'll obviously have our trilogy of what I call our post-match shows. So great show, my friend, but let's wrap this up. For Max Cohen, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.